Hello, fellow rebel capitalists. Hope you're well. Breaking news. I'm sure a lot of you have seen it. Netflix is down like 35% after they announced that their subscriber growth had declined. The first time since, I believe, about 10 years that they've actually lost subscribers. So I think the bigger question is how... is this reflective of the NASDAQ tech stocks in general, or is it even reflective of the, or is it a reflection of the entire stock market? We all know that the stock market is in a massive bubble, as is the bond market, as is the real estate market, as is everything else. So is this a crack in the dam that could be the canary in the coal mine, so to speak? Let's check out this article from CNBC. Okay. And I had this highlighted. Unfortunately, the highlights just sometimes randomly disappear. But bottom line here, Netflix closes down 35%, wiping more than $50 billion off market cap. So first thing I wanted to share with you is the difference between stocks and real estate. Real estate is a very slow moving vehicle. It's like the Titanic, you know, it's like a big ship where to turn it around, it takes a long time. And I know a lot of people that are rebel capitalists, and in the comments and the replies on social media, they're always saying, you know, when's this, the housing market going to collapse? You got to realize that even the collapse of the GFC took from 2006 to 2012. Why is that? Because the sellers are always looking into the rearview mirror and the buyers are always looking through the windshield, as my good friend Jason Hartman always says. So if you're a seller of a house and you just put your house on the market and maybe it's a bad time or it was bad timing and the market kind of peaked, let's say 2 weeks ago. Well, you want to get for your house exactly what your neighbor got. Well, my neighbor got $1 million, so I want to get $1 million. And then the market starts to go down. Well, I'll just hold on. The market will turn around. This is exactly what happened in 2006, 2007. Exactly. I remember this well because I had a lot of friends that were in that business, and a lot of my friends, I know one friend in particular was in the mortgage business. And this was their mindset that, oh, the market's going to turn around. This is just a blip down. This is just temporary because of XYZ rationalization. And, you know, that's what the buyers do. But what happens is after about a year, then they start to realize, holy cow, I'm not going to get what I thought I was going to get. And therefore, I need to sell ASAP. So then they start to lower their price, but not just lower their price. They do it fast, super fast. And then they find that even at that lower price, there are no buyers. They lower it again. They lower it again. They lower it again until finally the market kind of finds a bottom. And this is what happened in, call it between 2010 and 2012. If my memory serves me right, the overall U.S. market bottomed out in about August of 2012, which just happens to be when I got involved with real estate and I started to buy. So that was good timing there. But it wasn't because I was smart. It was just because I was buying things when they were cheap and just hoping to sell them when they were expensive. But my point is the stock market, it doesn't work that way. The housing market to wipe out 35%, or for the housing market to go down by 35%, take a long time, but the stock market can do it literally overnight. And this is what most people, I think a lot of young people that haven't experienced a big crash where the Fed, although they tried to come in and save the day, maybe they weren't able to do so, or maybe they didn't intervene here in the United States, or maybe in Japan as an example, where their stock market crashes and nothing they can do can prop it back up. So it's, you know, crashes by 50% and it stays there for the next 15 years. And does nothing. You see, most young investors in the United States have never experienced that. It's always just buy the dip, buy the dip, buy the dip. But what they don't realize is all these companies, especially the tech companies, they're priced for perfection. You guys probably hear that all the time. So like Netflix was priced as though they would just continue to add subscribers just indefinitely into the future. You know, I'm sure Facebook and Tesla and others are priced the same way. But if you're buying a stock like that, you got to realize that your downside is massive. Absolutely massive. And this is why I always say that you've got to do a risk reward. And most people, they never do that. They just try to predict, well, is the stock going to go up or down? As you guys know, I don't like doing that at all. I don't even like asking that question. I don't try to guess the price. You just ask, is it cheap or is it expensive? Based on, you know, several metrics. It's obviously a lot easier to do that with commodities, which is one reason I like commodities better. But once you determine that it's cheap, okay, you can go ahead and buy it. Once you determine it's expensive, you go ahead and sell it. But with some of these high-flying tech stocks that are priced to perfection, you've got to ask yourself, okay, what's the upside here? Okay, let's say the upside on Netflix is a 20% gain for the year, but the downside is 50%. And by the way, just this year alone, Netflix is down 62%. So you can sit there and say, well, I think the price is going up. Okay, fine. What's your upside? Well, 20%. Okay, what's your downside? Well, you know, 50%, 60%, but I still think the stock's going up. Well, who cares what you think the price is going to do? It's all about risk reward. And as some of you know that are Rebel Capitalist Pro members, I always talk about a 10-80-10 portfolio. So that's what I try to do myself to the best of my ability, where 10% is insurance. And for me, that's physical gold. 80% is stuff that pays me to own it. So like dividend paying stocks, real estate is an example. And then the other 10% would be the speculative portion of the portfolio. And there I just look for asymmetry. So I don't say, and notice I said asymmetry, not stuff where I think the price is going to go up. That's a big difference. So with Netflix is not something that I'd have in that speculative side of the portfolio, because even if I thought the price is going to go up, the downside is far greater than the upside. That makes no sense. So, you know, you contrast this to, let's say, March of 2020, when I bought the uranium ETF, which has been dissolved since then, but it went up, it tripled or quadrupled before they dissolved it. But when I bought that uranium ETF, that was the coal ETF. I'm getting these things confused here. I bought uranium as well, but the uranium ETF did not dissolve. It still exists. So the uranium ETF, I mean, it had done nothing, zero. I think it was around $8 or something like that. I can't recall the exact price, but something around $8. And it had been there for like 2 years, just blah, 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 bottom, 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 absolutely doing nothing. And then it goes down, or maybe it was around 10 or 12. Then it went down during the cerveza sickness, the beginning to like $8 or something like that. And you're like, okay, at $8 with uranium, that's not only extremely cheap, but even if it's not paying you to own it, that would be my definition of a speculative asset. What's your risk reward there? So you just look at your, you know, the last bull run for uranium, and you see that prices got up to whatever it was, $120, $150. And so you say, okay, well, what did this, you know, what would that mean for the price of this ETF? And you see that you could get a five bagger, a six bagger, but then what's your downside? Your downside is almost, it's not zero, obviously, but your downside is a lot less because it has just been unloved for so long. And then like Jim Rogers teaches us, you got to look for a catalyst. And once you find that catalyst, you buy it. And again, the asymmetry is in your favor, meaning the downside is very low. The upside is extremely, extremely high. Where with a lot of these tech stocks, it's the complete opposite. Even if you think the price is going up, the asymmetry is against you. And Netflix is just a perfect example of how this can just destroy a portfolio. Hey guys, I want to remind you to get your tickets to Rebel Capitalist Live. This is the live conference I do twice per year with all of your favorite speakers from the Rebel Capitalist Show and experts in investing, commodities, real estate, freedom, and liberty. All of your favorite topics, all of your favorite speakers. The next Rebel Capitalist Live is going to be in Miami. And tickets increase in price as we get closer to the event. So go to RebelCapitalistLive.com right now to get your tickets to the next Rebel Capitalist Live. It's the conference you cannot afford to miss. It'll help you increase your financial freedom and, more importantly, your personal freedom. You'll get intel that you won't hear anywhere else. Past speakers have included icons in macroeconomics, investing, and personal freedom and liberty. People like Dr. Ron Paul, Robert Kiyosaki, Brent Johnson, Lynn Alden, Jeff Snyder, Richard Werner, Mark Moss, Lynette Zhang, and Robert Breedlove, just to name a few. So once again, go to Rebel Capitalist Live right now and get your tickets today. So now getting into the article, the key points: the shares of Netflix plunged Wednesday after the streamer reported it lost subscribers in its most recent quarter. And again, I think it was the first time in 10 years that company shed more than $50 billion in market cap. So just think about that. $50 billion in market cap in what, 5 minutes after hours or an hour or whatever it took? I mean, that is staggering. And what does this teach us? This teaches us that no matter how rich you think you are, if all your quote-unquote wealth is in paper or in paper gains, be very, very careful with that, because you can go from super rich to super poor in about 5 minutes, as Netflix teaches us. At least 9 Wall Street firms downgraded the stock on the disappointing report. The drop caused, NASDAQ. So here's where I highlighted that it's the worst performing stock of 2022. It's down 62.5%. So then I had this next paragraph highlighted before my app stopped working. So Netflix said several headwinds are affecting growth, including increasing competition and the lifting of the restrictions for the cerveza sickness. Okay, well, what lesson can we learn here? Well, first of all, when I start from a 30,000 foot view, when I'm looking at investments, I think you can break them down into 2 buckets. Now, obviously, there's a lot more nuance than this, but if you start by breaking things down into buckets and just looking at things in the most simple way possible, you've got 2 goods or services. You've got stuff that we need and stuff we don't need. What would be something we need? Food. What else would be something we need? Energy. What would be something we do not need? Facebook, Netflix. You see where I'm going with this? And what you'll notice is the supply of stuff we need is decreasing. The supply of stuff we don't need, increasing. And this is a great example. They talk about the competition. So we'll list some of the competitors here, and you guys will see what they're saying. Now, the second, I think, lesson here, or one of many lessons, is lifting the cerveza sickness restriction. So people were out there buying all of these stocks just because short term they thought it would do well due to the cerveza sickness, whether it was Zoom, basically Kathy Wood's portfolio, or you can throw Netflix in there. This is very short termism, if that's a word. And you can invest however you want. This isn't investing advice, but I can tell you, I would never, ever, ever invest in something just because I think it thought it was going to get a pop for the next 6 months due to some government regulation. And therefore, I'm going to have to time it perfectly to get out. And if I don't get out at the right time, I'm going to lose my shirt. For me, that's as Jim Rogers says, that's a quick way to the poorhouse. And for a lot of people, that's what they do. They invest based on adrenaline, almost like it's a video game. Like they need that hit of dopamine instead of just looking at something that's extremely boring, unloved, looking for a catalyst, something that everyone hates, and buying it, sticking it in your portfolio, and just wait and do nothing. And that's what's very difficult for people to do, where they just get fixated on the price. They say, oh my gosh, well, Netflix, with the cerveza sickness, with the lockdowns, the price is going to go up. Well, the price is going to go up. Well, I've got to buy it. Buy, as Jim Cramer says. In my opinion, I'll leave that to the other guy. Again, quick way to the poorhouse. So here you can see a price chart and just, I mean, let's look at this. Let's see if they got the time in here. So at 50. I would imagine this is maybe Eastern time here because they probably reported right at the end of the bell or something like that. The share price was, 350 basically at 3:50 p.m. Eastern time. Then we fast forward to basically this morning and it's down to 216. So maybe not 5 minutes, but call it, 12 hours or whatever it is. This is not for me. Again, going back to uranium in 2020, buying it, that ETF at $8, it's not going to lose. It's not going to go down by 35% in 12 hours. I can tell you that for sure. But yet the upside on uranium was far more than the upside on Netflix, going back to that time, right? So let me highlight this. I had this highlighted earlier. Several streaming services stocks took a dive Wednesday, as you can imagine, morning along with Netflix. So Disney, Roku, Paramount, Warner Brothers, Discovery. So all of these competitors are in the game trying to set up these streaming services themselves, right? But then I guess my point here is look at how easy it is for supply to come online against Netflix. Now think about how hard it would be for additional supply to come online with coal or uranium fertilizer. You know, you see what I'm saying there. Yes, additional supply can come online, but it's not just at a flip of a switch. You can't just buy some sort of portfolio of content and now all of a sudden you stream it out to all these people or you start selling it. No. It takes you 5, 10, 15 years to create more supply of stuff that you got to dig out of the ground. And what people are starting to realize, I think, maybe the hard way, is that we need the stuff that's buried in the ground. The stuff on your computer, although it's nice to have, probably a great service, but at the end of the day, you don't need it. So for me as an investor, I want to invest in things where that are A, needed, therefore the supply is decreasing, instead of investing in things where the supply is actually increasing and increasing very easily. All right, guys, hopefully that kind of just sharing my thoughts there helps you have some kind of golden nuggets that you can take away and help give you value, maybe create a better framework or a more robust framework for your personal investing, and it will help you in the future. That's really the goal of those types of videos. So as always, make sure that you're standing up for freedom, liberty, free market capitalism. See you in the next video.